So one of the things that I think is very interesting comparing you to Kevin is you love to walk. Kevin does not.
It is something that you grow to love. I certainly didn't like it when I was younger. Hiking, the Mormon Battalion Trail, I thought that was an amazing thing to do. And I just, you know, if I could just get a taste of it, I was going to be happy. And, you know, that's all I got was just a couple of days with you, but it was a great memory. You create friendships out in the wilderness that you never forget each other. In Zions National Park, we're going along, and I look up, and this guy is kind of looking at me funny, and I pass by him, and then I hear him say, "Hey, PCT," and I thought, I know what that is, and I turn around, and he said, "You fed me in 2004 lentil soup." That was 10 years ago, and he remembered me.
We had trail angels come in a lot of forms along the long trek, but when this trail angel joined us at Vallecito Valley to Box Canyon, he brought a breath of fresh air and lifted the hearts of some very weary hikers. If you listened to the last episode titled Enduring the 90-Mile Imperial Desert, you will know that we are walking listeners through the three-day stretch between Plaster City, California and Box Canyon as we hiked it. You'll hear from multiple people in this sequence who share their various perspectives. We hope it will give you a glimpse of what it is like on that part of the trail. As I thought about our experience with Craig Smedley in the very last remote area that we hiked of the Imperial Desert, the thought occurred to me, I sure hope the battalion had someone like Craig with them. By the time we met Craig, we were tired and trail weary, and his surprise appearance brought an infusion of enthusiasm and laughter that was much needed. And if you don't sense that in this interview, you'll just have to get him out on the trail and it'll come out loud and clear. Thanks, Craig, for chatting with us.
You're welcome. Thank you. And what a sweet introduction and comment. I had no idea that I infused anything. Thank you.
Oh, you did. And just so you know, in this interview, you are much younger than we are, so we are counting on your memory to be better than ours.
Well, hopefully it's sharp. I know I suffer from COVID brain for anything that happened in the last year.
Well, the other thing besides your enthusiasm that I remember being struck by was your lack of gear and stuff. So I think the only thing you had of any type of protective gear or nature was your hat. And we were all bundled up in pioneer garb, and there you were walking along like you were out for a jaunt around the block without a care in the world. And so it was a real stark contrast to me after having to make sure we had all this equipment for safety and everything, to have you just show up and just be having a great time with nothing really compared to us.
I didn't realize that until I saw the pictures, but I did see one pair of pants, tan pants, and I wore tan pants that was filled with cactus needles. I know I got into some of those cactus pups that were so, such a bother in that section.
They were merciless, weren't they?
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. And I don't know if you've heard any of the other podcasts, but you know that we're kind of casual. We're not professional. And Kevin wanted to give you a little blurb about kind of why we're doing this.
So, you know, we kept a blog as we went along, and Denny had her notes and her journal. And this last summer, Denny realized that we're missing a whole side of the story, which is the experiences other people had who came along with us, and their insights and their connections to the original battalion and what we're doing. So we're not really looking for adulation for myself or Denny. That's really not our purpose. What we're looking for is how the trek influenced other people.
Okay. And that was a very influential day, a weekend for me.
Good. Then let's let Denny do her shtick and I'll butt in whenever I feel I need to.
One of the things I think would be fun for our listeners, since it was fun for me, is to get to learn a little bit about your experience and your passion for hiking trails. Can you just share a little bit about that so that we can kind of get a sense of where you're coming from with this whole experience?
Sure. And if you don't mind, I'll go back to let you know I was all about anything motorized. Motorcycles, okay. Snowmobiles, three-wheelers, four-wheelers, anything that would carry my body around, I was all about that until I was diagnosed with diabetes. And I could see that I was going to die very young, like my dad, my aunts and uncles. And that didn't look fun to me. So I made a dramatic change in my health, in what I ate, and in what I did. And I discovered that it's more enjoyable to use the motor inside of your body to move you around, as opposed to depending on something, you know, that would you could use for recreation in getting you to different spots. So I had a friend approach me about hiking the Appalachian Trail. And we didn't get down that path too far before I thought, well, why don't we just test out the Pacific Crest Trail right here in California? We don't have to fly back to, you know, the East Coast, the back East. So I started hiking it by myself because my friend bailed out. But I grew to love backpacking, and I despised it when I was a scout. And that's why I didn't get past Star Scout in that program. But boy, if I would have figured that out years ago, how much fun backpacking was, and the achievement, a feeling of accomplishment that you get when you reach a high point or get through a difficult stretch, it's a great feeling. So I envied your family, you as a couple, in hiking from Mount Pisgah. I thought that would be truly an epic hike.
It was long, but I don't think it had as much hills as yours did.
Yeah, I went up and down a lot through the High Sierras, the Cascades, the mountains all around the Southern California area. So it had its tough parts.
I'm going to digress and just make a short comment here. Now, see, most people say that when they heard that we were going to hike the trail, their initial response was, I thought Kevin was crazy. But obviously, you're already crazy, too, so you don't think we're crazy.
Yeah, I'm crazy like you're crazy. Yeah. And there's more and more people getting crazier all the time.
Tell us about your trail angel work.
That's had some interesting twists. I set up in a stretch that was most difficult for me nearby Anza. And I would serve lentil soup for many years. Then I changed it up to omelets. I switched up to a part that was away from the highway, so there wasn't so much noise. Close to Cabazon, where the trail comes down into I-10. I set up by a drinking fountain up on the hill, but that was short-lived because it was too much trouble to pack my stuff up there. The water company wouldn't let me use their road. So my most recent adventure was just this last year, and I set up at Interstate 15, and the trail, Pacific Crest Trail, it's also the old Route 66 that would come down into Cajon Pass, and a lot of history there. It also has a view of Mormon Rocks. As hikers would come in, I would offer to wash their clothes and provide them a shower, and they could have their clothes drying while they walked a mile away to the McDonald's, which is where they all wanted to go. No sense competing with McDonald's with whatever I could make. So I just provided them something that they couldn't get, that they were going to have to pay, you know, a large amount for by renting a hotel or waiting till they got up to Wrightwood. So it's been well received. I hope to expand that this year and maybe get some more help from volunteers that want to fill in the days that I couldn't fill in. But they appreciated very much being able to take a shower in a portable shower that was completely enclosed and wash their clothes, hand wash their clothes.
For those of you who don't know what a trail angel is, people who do long distance hiking on any of the trails are met occasionally by people who understand the difficulty of what's going on and some of the nice things that are done for people. So trail angels are people who show up and provide food or comfort or some kind of a service to these long through hikers and or long distance hikers. And they're greatly appreciated, and they gain some notoriety among the hiking people who do long hikes. And now, so this place that you put up, is that where the, big camp, there's Big Ma Marker there. I think we were just there a couple weeks ago.
Yes, there are two markers, one for Fort Cajon.
And
then another marker for pioneers. They used to camp in that area as they were going up and down the Santa Fe Trail.
And that's the route, that was the early route that the Mormon Battalion veterans used going back and forth to Utah. Right?
They did. I think the ones that used that route from the Mormon Battalions were that 60 or so men that stayed an extra year. They called them Mormon Volunteers. Italian volunteers, and instead of going to Fort Los Angeles to be discharged, they went up through our neighborhood of Murrieta, Temecula, straight into Cajon Pass, and met up with Orrin Porter Rockwell, who showed them, who went with them, and then when they got to what's nowadays Cedar City, Rockwell said, you know, I think you could probably make it through on a wagon from here. I came through here last year on horseback. So that for the first set of wagon tracks from Cedar City to Salt Lake were, again, the Mormon Battalion. So they established roads that are nowadays modern day part of Interstate 8, Interstate 80 or 9, yeah, 80 up in Northern California, and Interstate 15 from Cedar City to Utah or to Salt Lake.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that McDonald's.
Yes, it's a treat.
Yeah, when you described that, I said, I was just there.
Did you see Craig?
No, I didn't see Craig.
Well, I think it's neat what you're doing. And Kevin and I have also always had a dream to hike the Appalachian Trail. So
no, that's Denny's dream. I don't want to do the Appalachian Trail.
I don't either, Kevin. I'm with you, and it's because of one small thing, the dreaded tick. Lyme disease is rampant on the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah. Not to mention humidity.
Yeah, and heat.
Yeah. We did go and hike a portion of the Appalachian Trail once when we were in Virginia, and the thing that discouraged me from wanting to do more was there was no, very little view or vista. You were just always seeing nothing but trees around you on the part that we did. And I had hoped to have something more like I experienced on the Mormon Battalion Trail, where we would have big open spaces and we could see for far distances. And where we tried it, it just wasn't that type of experience for us.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are many places along the AT Appalachian Trail that are beautiful and scenic, but yeah, between the heat, the ticks, and the lack of expansive views, I'm not anxious to do that one. But yeah, you're talking me into the Pacific Coast Trail.
It is. That's the stark difference between the two. They call the Appalachian Trail, its nickname is the Green Tunnel. Pacific Crest Trail, just expansive views every which way. The desert's beautiful because of that. The mountains, there's not a part of it that isn't spectacular because of the views you have.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I think is very interesting comparing you to Kevin is you love to walk. Kevin does not.
When I was out, they tried to get a bunch of us to go up to the Appalachian Trail and do a 50 miler. I signed up, but I was grateful when they came back and said, oh, we couldn't get enough people to do it. So never mind.
It is something that you grow to love. I certainly didn't like it when I was younger, but here I am, you know. Well, at that time, I was in my late 40s, early 50s when I was hiking the Pacific Crest Trail.
Did you do the whole thing, Craig?
I did in sections. So started in 2004, finished in 2008. And there were some spots there was a bridge out in on the Suwato River in Washington. So I had to do a road walk around that and then biked it on my sister's bike, a little section that someone insisted they were going to pick me up and take me to the trailhead because I was going to get lost. And I was grateful for that because as a result of that, I got to the Canadian border within a half hour of what I told my family I would be there on August 21st at high noon. And I got there at 11:30 and we left on a Alaskan Inside Passage cruise the next day. So losing a day of that he helped me make up made all the difference.
We had a situation like that on our hike. It got us where we needed to be when there was no way we would have made it otherwise. So I can relate to that story.
Yeah.
Well, that explains if you were hiking in 2008, why you were dancing all around the rest of us, going up those hills and hiking along. Tell us how you found us, Craig. I just thought this was so fascinating.
You know, I read an article in the newspaper. I think it was the newspaper. Somehow I heard that you were in that area and I went out to try to find you. And it was a Sunday morning and I had a pretty clear picture of where you were going to be. But when I got there, there was a troop of Boy Scouts hiking through, but they had not seen you. And so I kind of gave up and thought, well, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I can at least go to church since it's Sunday. I went up to Julian, walked in, and guess who I ran into? Kevin and Denny.
Oh, it's just
so that's how we met, was at church. Little did I know that I would end up finding you there.
It's just a coincidence.
Call it coincidence, but my opinion, there's when something's meant to happen, there's never a coincidence. It's all directed.
Well, the fun thing was, I find out, you know, you come up to us at church. Oh, I've been looking for you. I can't believe I found you. Can I hike with you? And I thought, well, sure, of course you can, you know, go home and get your stuff. You say, oh, no, I have everything with me. I'm ready. So that was funny.
That was a sweet time. And the family we stayed with on their property, I'm trying to remember their name.
The Jensens. They were amazing.
Jensens, yes. What a sweet, sweet people. I've been back there a couple of times with scouts as we've done Box Canyon, you know, as a repeat for me. But yeah, they're great people.
Yeah. And they just took you in like, no big deal. You know, none of us knew that you were coming and they just said, well, come and have, you know, stay with us. And it was just like, okay, we're all one big happy family. So it was wonderful. Well, you kind of answered this question, but if you would care to go into more detail, actually, what were your thoughts when you heard Kevin was going to try to hike the Battalion Trail?
You know, I guess I thought there are those that did a reenactment of the wagon train. You know, they hitched up their oxen to wagons, and they reenacted that and successfully did that. That sounded pretty fun. But hiking, the Mormon Battalion Trail, I thought that was absolutely an amazing feat, an amazing thing to do. And I just, you know, if I could just get a taste of it, I was going to be happy. And, you know, that's all I got was just a couple of days with you, but it was a great memory. And, you know, it's funny. You pass people every day of your life and you don't remember them, but I'm with my family on a family reunion. We're hiking up the Narrows in Zions National Park. And we're going along a stretch that's asphalt, you know, trying to get up into the canyon a little further. And I look up and this guy is kind of looking at me funny. And I pass by him and then I hear him say, "Hey, PCT." And I thought, I know what that is. And I turn around and he said, "You fed me in 2024 lentil soup." That was 10 years ago. And he remembered me. You create friendships out in the wilderness that you never forget each other.
And that was true for me, working with the original handcart treks at BYU. That's true working with youth and the scouts. That's true working on so many of these kinds of activities that take people out of their normal life and put them into situations that you really begin to appreciate what we have in life and the people that are involved in your life. And so, yeah, I get it.
And with your saying, you know, it was a very short time, but that's the thing that has kind of taken me aback as we've recontacted people and tried to get in touch with them. The emotions and the feelings and the memories that just flood back when we hear the voice and we talk about the things that we experienced together. It just really has been an incredible experience to reconnect with people.
Those are tender things. I mean, it does pull at your heartstrings to remember these kindnesses. Yeah.
Yep. And you renew acquaintances and it's like you have never been separated. And there may be, you know, like going to a family reunion and seeing someone you haven't seen for 20 years.
Yeah.
Exactly. So did you choose to hike in that location on purpose, Mark?
No. It's just the very next day, when I heard about you doing that and approximately where you were, I just headed out to see if I could find you. And that happened to be where you were. I didn't know what Box Canyon was really until you educated me and I walked through it. I didn't know how to look for rust on the rock to identify, you know, where the wagon trains, but I found a really nice big boulder that had some rust on it. And then when Kevin came up to it, it was like I'd really found a treasure. So he gathered us all together and talked about how a wagon would have rolled along, gotten on top of this rock and then slid off, leaving that mark of rust on it. And then, you know, dropping 2 or 3 inches and as it rolled over this boulder, then the erosion that happened around it, it gave me a very clear picture of what the road must have been like, you know, 100 years earlier or 175 years earlier.
And that was going across Campbell's Grade, which is a couple, about 3.5-4 miles before we get to the Box Canyon, if I remember.
Yeah, that's right.
It was. And that's just a gnarly little hill. I mean, you know, those boulders are anywhere from 18 inches to 3 feet in diameter. My God. Yep.
That was an incredible place to try to imagine them trying to navigate up that hill. Well, one of the things that I remember, and I won't be able to probably put the video into the podcast, but the goal is to eventually take these podcasts and make videos of them with the pictures of these things that we're talking about so people can see them. But in the podcast, I will include this delightful moment at Campbell's Grade where Craig is standing by a Mormon Battalion monument and he gives a Tarzan yell, I guess is what you would call it. What would you call it, Craig?
That's what I call it. And that's how I got my PCT trail name. Is my trail name is Tarzan. I had gone by Smed for the first year. I gave myself my trail name, but you can't give yourself a trail name. You're given a name and everybody else starts calling you that. So I was at my ANZA spot to do trail magic and on the Pines to Palm Highway. And as hikers would come over the ridge there, I would welcome them into camp with a Tarzan yell. So after a few days of that, they started calling me Tarzan.
And so why did you choose that to do?
The trail magic?
No. Why did you decide to start using a Tarzan yell?
Oh, that's what everybody called me. I didn't have a choice.
Yeah, but no. But you started using that, the actually using the Tarzan yell. Why did you decide to use the Tarzan yell?
Oh, gotcha. That I guess it was something I had just done all my life. I'm not what you call shy or reserved. I'm more loud and obnoxious is my personality. So, you know, I find the most, you know, just the most enjoyable places to do my Tarzan, you know. But that goes, you know, I started in high school. But it's, you know, just something that I've been able to do. And I just, it's a fun thing. It's what I guess I'm known for in my family as well.
It stuck.
Yeah.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
It was a good idea because we were standing there in front of that monument and then, or marker, and then we were looking up the hill of Campbell's Grade. And we had just talked about how when the battalion got there and Colonel Cook came up to the guides and they said, hey, we're stuck. You know, we don't think we can get over this thing. And you just popped right in after Kevin explained that and said, well, if my ancestor was here, this is what I think he would have done. And you gave the good old Tarzan yell and said, charge, let's get over this thing. So it was perfect for where you decided to share it with us.
It took me somewhat aback, I must admit.
It does usually everyone.
You have an ancestor. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who your ancestor is and what you know about him?
Levi McCullough, Company C, small framed man, wiry, but he made the entire trek. They got back to Salt Lake, after they went to Northern California, then came across the Mormon Carson Pass. They went up and around the north end of the Great Salt Lake and down into Salt Lake, found out their families were not there, that they were still back at winter quarters. And so as tired and exhausted as they were, they continued east. And he was with, my sister-in-law's ancestor, Hunsaker. I forget his first name, but he had a crazy story. They were all starving to death. They did not have any food to eat. They were trying to get back as fast as they could. They didn't take the time they needed to get game and to eat. But they came to a river. It was cold, freezing river and deep. And they could see corn on the other side of this river. And Hunsaker decides he's going to go over there. But he knows he needs a fire to get warm after being in this river. So he takes his pot, his cooking pot, and fills it up with fire. And then starts to go into the river. The river got up to his chest, almost, let's say, to his chin. So he takes the pot and sticks it on top of his head. I think he must have had a hat to insulate that. But you see his head going across the river with this pot of fire on top of it. he gets to the other side and gets his fire going and gets some ears of corn to roast. And he looks over and here's a Indian brave on his horse that had been staring at him and watching him the whole way. And he just, the Indian brave just looks at him like, "You pathetic white man." He just turned his horse and walked away and figured, "You're going to be dead anytime soon. I'm not even going to waste an arrow on you." But he, great story from my sister-in-law's family. But the one memorable thing about Levi is that when they finally got back to winter quarters, he and two other men were inside of a tent, and their families were notified that they were here. So here comes one of Levi's sons, opens the tent door, looks at him, and says, "Which one of these raggedy old men is my pa?" He didn't even recognize him.
Well, did you have any impressions or thoughts about your ancestor as you were going through those areas?
You know, I remember the story. It must have come from you and Kevin that most of their tools for excavating, picks, shovels, were lost when a wagon slipped off and fell into the Colorado River that was on a barge, you know, or some something was taken it across. So they lost their tools that they would have used to carve through there, and what they were using was their bayonets on their guns and axes. They happened to have some axes. So as you see the narrowness of that canyon and the sandy bottom, all the times that my primary teachers had talked about that, I remember that coming back to mind and realized, yeah, you couldn't get a wagon through here without the wheels, you know, breaking, collapsing in as they're trying to climb over this through this canyon. So they had to widen it just enough to get a wagon through. But sure, you know, gratefully with bayonets, with axes, maybe a shovel, not very many of them, not like what they had, they were able to get it cleared.
Yeah.
Well, are there any other memories of that day, Craig, that you can share?
Well, finding the rock with the rust on it, that was most memorable. Being in Box Canyon, that I'll never forget. Oh, yeah, we kind of got a little separated. After we got through Box Canyon, I found myself all by my lonesome. And so I'm walking along and I'm finding, you know, the different markers and figuring, okay, this is the path that I know I need to continue east in this direction. And here shows up a guy in a little Honda and gets out and says he's from the Press Enterprise. So he takes a picture of me standing next to a marker, and I say, "Well, I'm not the guy you want to talk to. I'm just here on their coattails. You need to be talking to Kevin and his wife Denny, and they're around here somewhere. I'm gonna guess they're up this road." So I got in the car with him, and we went and found you again, and you were up by a little camping area close to where the there's a set of S curves in the highway, I would call it a camping area. I knew that there was a outhouse that was there, that, you know, the cement outhouses that the state puts up. So that interview happened right there, and that was pretty much at the close of the day. So that was a good way to finish up the day, is getting a ride on the last leg in.
Cheater.
Yeah, I know. I felt like I cheated. That's why I went back and did it again.
Speaking of San Diego, it was interesting to me, and we've talked a little bit about this in previous episodes, but it was really a transition for us to leave the wilderness, so to speak, and go into the city. And one of the big challenges we had was, oh my gosh, where are we going to park the RV? Because at that point, my dad's oxygen demands were so high that we needed somewhere that we had a good electrical outlet with enough power to not shut down people's circuits. And you, I believe, came through and helped us with that. We didn't really know where we were going to go when we got to Temecula. We didn't have anywhere to go. And I think you're the one that paved the way for us and got us somewhere to stay.
You know, I don't remember that detail, but I do remember seeing you on a stretch of your road walk. And I remember thinking also how much I hated walking on asphalt. And I didn't know how it was impacting you going from dirt trail to asphalt and cement, because road walking is most miserable for any hiker.
It was very miserable. And actually, that was the most dangerous situation Kevin was in terms of almost losing his life, was on one of those roads coming out towards Warner's Ranch.
Yeah.
Peter saved his life. Otherwise, Kevin would have been splat on the road.
Yeah, wow.
It was a tight turn on a very narrow road. And I thought I'd left myself enough room to see around. But as I started to cross the road, Peter yelled and I jumped back just in time as a pickup went by me, and pretty close.
Oh, yeah.
Roadkill.
You feel very safe in the mountains and out in the wilderness. It's when you get close to town that things start getting very dangerous and crazy.
Yeah, and for those who are listening, when we say it's miserable to hike on asphalt, and it's not as bad as hiking through cactus, but...
good point.
Yeah, it's harder on the feet, I think, generally speaking. Most of the time you're on flat ground, but and you may think asphalt's flat, and it is, but it's really different. It's harder.
It's not just the asphalt, it's the noise.
Yeah.
When you've been out where there's no noise, you can hear your feet on the gravel or on the road, and then all of a sudden you're just surrounded by all this noise.
Well, I end up getting joint pain, and I think it's because I'm walking on a 0.4% slope that every road and every sidewalk has to have to drain water. So you wear out your ankles, you wear out your knees, your hips, because you're constantly, you know, rubbing on those spots, because they, unlike a trail that it's, you know, up and down, twisting and winding, you're on the same path. So even hiking today, I do not hike on cement unless I absolutely have to get from my house into the creek bottom. I'm happy. So that's what I find. I never get joint pain when I'm hiking on dirt.
And you know, again, I think the general public probably is not really aware of it, but yeah, roads have from the center line to the outside on both sides is sloped in order for the rainwater to drain away. And you wouldn't think that would be much of a problem, but when you hike consistently on one side of the road, as you should be safe, your left leg, generally speaking, is lower than your right leg, and that throws you a little bit sideways, and it actually does hurt your hips.
Yeah, you got it. Well said.
Well, your memories in San Diego, I think it would be fun to touch a little bit on the big event in San Diego and your memories of that, or anything that you did there with us, the big celebration down in San Diego, and we're trying to get people excited to come and participate in that. So would you just kind of paint a picture for people that maybe have not been there and help them see why this is such a big deal and such a wonderful thing to attend?
Yes. And I, you know, we moved from Utah to the Murrieta Temecula area in 88. I had been here many years and not gone down to San Diego because it wasn't part of our region, you know, so we weren't assigned to set up any kind of booth or didn't get pulled into that. But for all those years that we had been there, San Diego Stakes had some kind of, you know, making rope, making dolls, making bricks, you know, something that, that they had a booth set up for that, that visitors could come by and learn and enjoy. So when I went there for the first time was when I went to meet you guys at the end of your trip. And I was just thrown for a loop that this had existed all these years. So I've gone back several years after that, or many years, many times after, just to take family and friends. We're going to go again this year to meet some friends there. But it's really a fun event that the Stakes in San Diego County pull together. And, you know, it's a great way to get a flavor of what life would have been like in the 1800s.
And of course, this year we're having the joint event with the Oregon-California Trail Association Conference on the 27th, 28th, and 29th there in San Diego. And we're hoping people will take the opportunity to come. There'll be speakers on the 27th and the 28th that will be presenting different aspects of California history, and the battalion will be part of that. And then Saturday, of course, is the big commemorative event for the battalion itself. So come one, come all. It's going to be a great event.
It will be.
It is.
An exciting year.
And it's so perfect for families, and it doesn't cost anything, in case people are wondering.
And how much fun that the 175th falls on the day that they actually entered San Diego. And it'll be the day that they have the commemoration. So it's fun. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yep, me too.
I guess, is there anything else that we've mentioned or that we forgot that you had come to mind that you wanted to share?
I will never forget you, Denny, for giving me, and this was in San Diego, a wonderful homemade bar of soap. And that was your last gift to me before you and Kevin headed back to your home. And I thought, isn't that sweet of her? But I used every bit of that soap and enjoyed it. Thought of you and Kevin and our experience, and it was a good memory.
We were pretty unrecognizable, weren't we?
Yes, I'm sure the difference when you shaved your beard off from what I knew you as, that was a big difference.
Yeah, in fact, may I share that quick story? So
yeah,
a year later, we after we finished the hike and I had the beard, the next year we went back to San Diego for the dedication of the New Mormon Battalion Visitor History Center. And as luck would have it, we took occasion to head up to the San Diego Temple. We walked in the front. Of course, I'm clean shaven. I'm in my suit. I'm looking, you know, kind of presentable at this point. And Denny, of course, always looks presentable. We walk in, and who is standing in the foyer welcoming people to the temple but Craig Smedley? And I see him across the foyer, and I think, oh, this is wonderful. And I look at him and say, Brother Smedley, how are you doing? And you looked at me with this blank expression like, I don't know who this person is. And I recognized that you didn't recognize me. And I thought, oh, we've just got to play this to the hilt. So I walk up to you and grab you by the hand and pump your hands. I said, it's so good to see you again, Brother Smedley. It's been a long time since I've seen you. And you are just thunderstruck. You have no idea who I am. And finally, I say, what if I had a really long beard? Would you recognize me now? And you looked at me and said, Kevin? At least that's the way I remember it. I don't know if you
remember. I remember that exactly the same way. That was a fun day.
Well, Craig, last question. If you had to describe your experience with us in hiking the battalion trail on those days in with one word, what word would it be and why?
Well, it was... The word that comes to my mind is it was very peaceful for me. It sure was a lot of fun, but I wasn't out there by myself. We were together. You know, it was just a very relaxed, peaceful, sweet day. I remember we started the day with breakfast in your RV, and you know, I still remember the sweet prayer and blessing on the food that you gave, that talked about how grateful you were to be able to go through these different sections of the trail, like Box Canyon, like Campbell Grade, that you specifically mentioned. I just thought it was a very heartfelt, sweet prayer, and that started the entire day for me. It was just a very sweet, peaceful day. Nothing like sometimes the fear that you have hiking by yourself, looking up at this massive, you know, snow-covered mountain that you've got to figure out how to get over. That can be a little fearful. Cactus was nothing, you know. I mean, they were painful, but I got through that pretty easy compared to some sections of the PCT.
Yeah.
But yeah, peaceful would be what I would describe, and I was grateful to be there with you.
Well, we were glad that you showed up too. It has been so fun to be able to chat and remember and laugh about the things that happened, and especially those cactus. That was amazing. You guys were lucky. You were wearing pants. I was wearing a skirt.
Well, you had more protection than we did.
So I had a wider swath.
That's right. It's wider. You can catch more of those jumping cactus. So you were dealing with them, I'm sure, more than we were.
It will be memorable, that's for sure. And when we get this on the video, you'll all be able to see the choya stuck to our legs and our skirts and our pants. So, and we even have a picture of the comb trying to get them off.
Oh, yeah. And the blood issuing from the holes.
Yep, that came with it.
It was so great to be able to visit with you. Thanks again, Craig.
Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for your kindness and welcoming me into what you're doing, you know, your journey. It's been very refreshing to make this friendship, and it's just I have no doubt it will be one forever, and I'm just glad our trails crossed each other.
Absolutely.